on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome to the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM. This week I'm here with Spencer, taking a closer look at culture in the Stones. What does that mean exactly? Well, we'll be talking about art and culture in parts of the Central Asia region, including an insight into working as an artist practitioner in Kazakhstan, too, after my trip last month with Hannah, Kerry and Charlotte.
We've also chosen a playlist of alternative music inspired by the Silk Road travel route. And of course, I'm here, which means, of course, we're going to be dipping into a little bit of film too. So sit back and relax, and let's look at another different part of the world. With me, Spencer.
And me, Natalie, on the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
Men of your kind, traitors like you, talk about mercy, but what did you do when the power was yours? Did you protest, or did you just close your eyes like the rest? Well, the tables have turned, I'm in command. Doctors and lawyers and poets be damned, all you privileged men, pompous and wise, puffing cigars on a mountain of lies. But the truth cries out to be told, for a new world, everything old has to fall. Mercy at all. Justice is dead, life isn't fair. Your brand of justice brought only despair to an innocent girl, victim of lust, used for amusement, then tossed in the dust. And there is no justice for swine, till your whole class dies in a line at the wall. No mercy at all. How many nights have I dreamed of this day, aching to score. Men of your kind gave her chocolates and brandy, but I gave her a war. All I have to do is aim the gun. All I have to say is when. Purge you one by one, and when I am done, Russia will be pure again. Mercy, plead, mercy. You sweat like a rat in a cage, cringing in dread, cornered like me when that gutter ran red, and the steel blades tore through our skin as the Tsar's guard bellowed its infamous call. Now reap what you sow.
And that was No Mercy at All, performed by Paul Alexander Nolan from the Broadway cast recording of Dr. Zhivago. Based on the book of the same name, Dr. Zhivago chronicles the life of Yuri Zhivago, a political idealist, physician and poet whose life is wrapped up in the tides of history as the Russian Revolution commences. Soon he must choose between a life with his close childhood friend and wife and the passionate and mysterious Lara Gwisha. Zhivago, however, is not alone in his yearnings for Lara and must compete with both revolutionaries and aristocracy alike to win the heart of the women he cannot live without.
You can literally what make a guy. A musical about anything nowadays. It almost makes me sick. I am going to put a plug for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre musical, or maybe A Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell, the musical.
I think Charlotte would probably like that, though.
She probably would.
Musical fans travel from across seas to go and see it. Does Texas Chainsaw Massacre Nymphoid musical.
Does it not make you think, though? We've had some, like, really, like, a lot of these adaptations lately, they've had some, like, really dark tones. And it sort of makes you wonder where you're going. Are we going to be going for Auschwitz, the musical, at some point?
No.
I don't know. No. It just seems a little bit...
I mean, to be honest, Russian Revolution is quite dark anyway. So. What was that musical that we went to see with Charlotte that was about the KPG?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
That was great. That was Azerbaijani, actually, wasn't it?
I can't remember what that was. That was, yeah, that was unusual and, yes, dark.
But weirdly jolly at the same time.
Yeah. I just struggle to get past La La Land, really.
You struggle to get past La La Land?
Do you know what I mean? That's it for me. In terms of musicals, it's like, okay, like a bit of Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, as in you like La La Land?
Yeah, yeah. I just struggle with a musical, especially when, as I said, they're like things that you really feel like you shouldn't be making a musical out of. Dr. Zhivago, it just seems a little bit off whack for me. I mean, as I said, what's next? Kramer versus Kramer, the musical.
I think that's already been done. You can't steal that one.
What have you been up to this week, Natalie?
What have I been up to? I haven't been writing any musicals, and I feel like I should. But yeah, I mean, obviously I was travelling to Kazakhstan last week, which is partly what this show is about, all of the travels in Central Asia. But I guess part of that travel, I did watch a lot of films while I was on the plane, because actually it was this like 23 hour journey there and back. On the way there, we didn't have a TV in the back of the aeroplane, so unfortunately there was no Barbie, because you promised me this, that I would be able to watch Barbie on the plane, but that didn't happen.
When I went to the Turkish end of the trip, yeah, all the best films and all the best, the best tech and the best films were on that first leg when I did this variation of a trip. So yeah, I had high expectations for decent quality film on there. I think I can't even remember what it was I watched. Oh, the film Nobody with the guy out of Better Call Saul had just been released, and that was on the plane. And I remember turning around to Peter and saying, it seems like this is a little bit violent to be playing on a plane.
Like, who's watching us watch this film?
Yeah.
I had an awkward moment on the plane on the way out, because we didn't have the TV screens, and part of the airline we were flying with, their policy is that you always get food on a plane. So because I'm a vegetarian, I thought I need to make sure I get my vegetarian food. So I pre-booked the vegetarian food, just presuming that everyone else would get a dinner on this flight. And that didn't happen. I was the only person on the flight that got a dinner, and I got it served in a big box. And then Carrie, Hannah and Charlotte are kind of giving me this evil look of, why do you have food and we do not have food? And then everyone else was kind of handed out a bit of a soggy roll while I had this full meal of vegetarian delight. And there was no TV, which is also something that I'd promised would be on the flight, because generally there is TV on the flight.
You quite literally had the box of delights.
I had the box of delights.
Excellent.
And I overheard a vegan complaining about the cheese roll that he got, and I was thinking, my whole box is vegan. And am I going to do the nice thing and ask the man if he wants my Mediterranean sandwich, or am I going to keep that in my bag for later, just in case Hannah or Carrie or Charlotte want it?
I hope you didn't do the nice thing and kept it all for yourself.
I didn't know how to ask him whether or not he wanted a roll from my box of delights, but I did continuously offer Charlotte Trower the roll every day.
See, what you could have done is you could have, if you were worried about how you would present the roll to him, you could have just bunged it at the back of his head. And it would have been like, stop your whining, have the roll.
I was actually quite jealous of the cheese rolls that were going round, though, because I had a vegan box.
Can understand that.
But you can't complain, can you, when you've got a big box of delights and everyone else has got a soggy roll. But anyway, on the trip on the way back, there was film, and I watched a lot of film. I watched Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, which I highly recommend for any of those Shrek fans. Because there was a giant Tom Thumb in it, which is great, and also Goldilocks and the Three Bears had a big play in that. But more seriously, and I think this is probably mentionable because it is Black History Month this month, I watched Chevalier, which is a film based on the factual story of composer Joseph Bolaño. So he was Chevalier de Saint-Georges. So he was an illegitimate son of an African enslaved and French plantation owner who rose to the height of French society as composer before an ill-fated love affair kind of ruined him. And actually the story is of the Chevalier and his friendship with Marie Antoinette, and it all seems a bit far-fetched. There's a scene right at the beginning where he interrupts a performance with Mozart and kind of steals the show, and you're kind of watching it thinking, oh, is this a reimagined Tao, or is this something that is kind of imposed? But actually it's a true story and it was lost, and as you watch the film you realise why this story was repressed at the time, and you find out later as well, as part of kind of the footnote of the film, that this Chevalier has kind of lost his presence in time because the people that enjoyed his story stopped talking about him completely because they were forced to. And actually black history and culture was repressed at a time where actually it was becoming accepted in France under Marie Antoinette, but after that French Revolution it was then suppressed again. But yeah, it was a really interesting story, and the music is amazing in it as well. All the way through it he's composing different scores and putting on operas, and yeah, it's all just very nice to listen to and watch.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think you can catch that on Sky Store, and I think I saw that it's, if you are fortunate enough to have Sky Movies, whatever it is they call it nowadays, that is screening over Christmas, I believe.
Oh, okay, cool. So, yeah. Yeah, highly recommend that. Is there anything you've been watching recently that you would recommend?
I've been watching Only Murders in the Building back to back because I got the vibe that I was missing out because Claire keeps gabbling on about it on this show.
I had to stop her from saying what happened at the end last week.
I don't think she would have said it anyway.
I feel like I know Barbie back to back.
Everyone knows Barbie back to back now. But no, I thought I needed to catch up on that. So I spent most of the last sort of week watching that. While you were away in Kazakhstan, I watched lots of classic cinema, including Kramer versus Kramer,
which is what has enlightened you to write this new musical.
Exactly. I'm very excited about the possibility of Kramer versus Kramer the musical. I tell you what else, talking about Black History Month, one of my favourite films is The Colour Purple. And I love that story, and if you've not seen it, you should really watch it. It's a Steven Spielberg film made around 1985, stars Danny Glover and Whoopi Goldberg, and it's the story of sort of like two generations in the same family. But guess what?
What?
They're turning it into a musical.
Really?
So, you know, I'm all up for watching that. I particularly want to see if
that's quite a dark film as well, though, isn't it? The Colour Purple.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of dark. So it's a weird mix of dark and light, joy and pain. But what I was just thinking about is there's this great bit. Oprah Winfrey is also in it, and she's an absolute monster until you realise why she's like that. But I think there's this bit where a stone gets thrown at her and it hits her, and I think it knocks her over or something. I'd like to see what song the musical comes up with for that particular scene, because it is a very important scene, because it's the way the story turns, and this person that is perceived to be evil, you get an explanation as to why and who she is. Other than that, I've spent much of particularly last night researching Dr. Zaius.
Well, it is film related.
It is film related. So I have a Dr. Zaius doll from the 1970s, and I've decided it's time for me and Dr. Zaius to part company. So I listed it on eBay. This doll is actually...
So any buyers out there, if you're interested in an original Dr. Zaius doll.
Yep, it's around the same age as me, which means it's 50. And it has fully poseable joints. And
it's not boxed.
It's not boxed. Because if it was boxed, it could be worth up to £500.
Mm.
So, yep, Dr. Zaius. Look for that on eBay. If you can spell Zaius, it is Z-A-I-U-S.
There we go. So after Spencer's sales pitch, we should probably get back to the show. So we're going to jump right into our first soundtrack of The Silk Road. This is a really popular rap artist from Tashkent in Uzbekistan called Shuru, I think, or Shocks Rux. I'm not too sure from the spelling. In Uzbekistan, like a lot of the Central Asian region, rap, especially politically motivated rap, is very popular. But sometimes it ends up being censored for the themes, dependent on which country and which government. This song in particular, which again, pronunciation might not be 100% correct, Ozabegum, sets the scene of a modern Samarkand, which is one of the busiest stops on the Silk Road. It's about pride in Uzbekistan as the motherland and pride in upbringing, in particular the artist's parents and grandparents. It's very much about how the people create the country and its legacy.
Mani ildim, illetim, aygini dagi Güzel ahlak degen, libası bar milletim Kulunu göksüge daim basken özbekim Mani ildim, gururum Canım futbol bosun da gerim, mani kemle her dem Salam aleyki bar, akıbette ahire tanki dalki dem o dem Hatır cem, özbekim benim illetim, danışman devan hanem Bu yerlerini gezdi bolib, hayranaklı harabatılar Devan ayı, maşayık, abdallar, ibn Sina babalarım Hazreti Nakşbend, derajatı kuluklar, balogerdallar Oh, terenin kainatırlarını bilişini ister Hemen bu adamzat, hazır gitkunda hemde ayyan bardavan Yine anıklarına yotken başaratını bilir idi kim? Uluğbek babam Uzbekim, manim Uzbekim, milletim, manim Zaminim belim gode yanadı bir bayan Her damal da Samarkandı Bukhara da yive damal Buldum ya dayı manim, buldum ya dayı manim Yine bu merkezim donuk dünyayım Olamadı manim Olamadı manim Dormas, shukr qillarim bor kechayu kunduz. Ota-onamning bergan tarbiyasini haqida ado etib bo'lmas ekan hamnus nechun ular bunday mehribon. Borliklari bir ulug'ing nom, farzandining aybini yashirish va af etishda bardavom. Chunki ular ham vaqtida shunday tarbiyat ko'rgan. Padar buzurglarimga ota-bobolarimdan yaxshilik, go'zal muomala, halim bo'lish va qolaversa kechirimli bo'lish degan omillar meros bo'lib qolgan. Har bir o'zbekning olgan tarbiyasi shu, lekin avlodi Temuriy nasllar safaraman bu fidokor. Qadadim umuman olganda borimni, hattoki har doim gadoim bo'lsa ham roziman umrbod. O millatim o'zbekim bilaman qadringni. O'zbekim Olamadı manis not so long ago.
He was big and strong, in his eyes a flaming glow.
Most people look at him with terror and the fear.
To Moscow chicks, he was such a lovely dear. He could preach the Bible like a preacher, full of ecstasy and fire.
That was Boney M with Rasputin. Just snuck that in there to highlight the favoured music acts of the Tashkent Film Festival.
Can I tell you some fun death trivia?
From the Tashkent Film Festival?
There is the possibility that I could tell you some fun death trivia about that. But Boney M's male singer, Bobby Farrell, was in St. Petersburg when he died on the 30th of December.
Yeah.
Ironically, the 30th of December was the same day that Rasputin died.
Oh. Do you think he was humming this song while he died?
I don't really think so. Apparently, he wasn't breathing at all. That was probably part of what
so
the
he probably wasn't
was.
Humming, no.
But, you know, not fun to laugh about death, but fun trivia that you happen to be in the same place on the same day that this legendary person that you've sung around over and over and over and over again died.
Mm.
How weird is that?
Yeah.
What are the chances of all the places you could be?
What I didn't realise until listening to this song the other day is actually how much Central Asian connection it has, because I always considered this song to be Russian, you know, very Russian, but actually discovering Central Asian, you realise that a lot of kind of the instruments and the sounds aren't Russian at all. They're very Central Asian, you know, like Kyrgyzstani, Tajikistani, you know, like with all of the stringed instruments.
And the thing.
Yeah. I don't know what that's called.
Yeah.
But they
it's
are fun.
Like a big giant trumpet thing.
Yeah.
That's like probably about 5 metres long.
Well, it's the same instrument that they played in the winner of the Eurovision, the Ukrainian song. I can't remember what it's called.
I'm sure somewhere in the back of my mind I heard someone call it something like a vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela?
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's not called that, I think we should just rename it a vuvuzela. Like every other instrument. What are you playing there? Oh, it's a violin. You sure it's not a vuvuzela?
We could do. Yeah, definitely. So you were saying about the Uzbekistan Film Festival, Tashkent Film Festival.
Mm.
And I've spoken about this on the air before, but so I won't bore you people with it. But we did actually have a funny potential death story that went alongside that, where on our flight home, I was pretty much passed out, and somebody was taken off in a stretcher, and people were looking around in the carriage for potential poisons.
Mm.
I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's quite dramatic.
It is, and to be honest with you, it was the most dramatic thing that happened during my time at Uzbekistan. So, you know, for anyone that has any concerns about countries like this and the safety, especially as they neighbour onto countries like Afghanistan, I'd just like to reassure you, they are actually very, very safe. You feel a total sense of freedom when walking around. You don't, and because there's such a high level of policing and a high level of sort of like public authority workers... Yeah.
It's almost like an added surveillance, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, like, there's nowhere that you can walk that is... We always have this conversation how in a lot of Central Asian countries, you feel like there's nobody really there. You go to what would be a tourist resort in this country, and you might be one of, say, 5,000 people that is there at that moment in time. You can go to a big... not tourist resort, you know, tourist attraction. And you could be like one of 5 people there. Yet, by the same token, there are always, you can turn around and you can always see like official people there connected to whatever it is you've gone to see.
Mm.
And whereas we in these Western countries, we streamline, they're putting more in. The one that always makes me laugh is the women, and it is, to be perfectly honest with you, almost 99% women that you will see walking along the streets with an old-fashioned broom, almost like a witch's broom, sweeping the streets.
Mm. Yeah, this is from like Soviet times, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, there is always a real push in Soviet Russia to make sure that the streets were clean and you were proud of your public spaces, people didn't walk on the grass. And after the fall of the Soviet Union, I know, especially in Azerbaijan, and this is probably true of the other countries as well, actually a lot of grandmothers decided that they wanted to work. It's a very social opportunity for them to go and either be groundskeepers or street cleaners, and it's almost like a social benefit. So if you don't have a job, you can go and clean the streets, or you can mow the grass or water the grass, and you get an income from that, and it's kind of like a social benefit, but also a really social occasion.
Hmm.
And interestingly, there's a bit of a tension between kind of the Muslim population and kind of the non-religious population, because in kind of the more Muslim beliefs, like the hardcore beliefs, is that the woman should be looked after in the house, like the matriarch shouldn't have to work. But then actually the elderly women do want to work because it's very social. So there's a bit of a push and pull situation there, where actually a lot of the Central Asian countries aren't religious countries as per se, because they've been part of the Soviet Union for so long.
Yeah. These women are often nicknamed, correctly or incorrectly, as babushkas, aren't they?
Oh, grandmothers, yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I think it's quite nice. I think to have kind of a light work job when you're elderly, it kind of keeps you mobile and social, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And actually, street cleaning, keeping pride in your public spaces, I think that, you know, is a good thing. And actually something that I noticed in Kazakhstan, in Astana in particular, it was very clean. There wasn't, we didn't find one piece of graffiti in the whole city anywhere. And everything was clean. People were putting things in bins. It's just like you don't see that so much in European cities.
I think there's a lot of past legacy to that, because although a lot of these places have very much kind of westernised, they are still under the fear of a previous authority.
Mm.
So, you know, there would have been a time that you probably would have gone to prison for littering or graffitiing. And I always remember the story of a man in Uzbekistan who was caught speeding, and his car was seized and taken by the government, and he was sent to prison for 3 months.
Wow.
So there's that fear of committing a crime is still there, but it's kind of not. So again, just want to reiterate, it is a very safe place. If you go to these countries and you behave yourself, don't behave like a, you know, English oik. You go there, you respect the culture, you treat people with respect, and you will have one of the most amazing experiences of your entire life, especially when you bear in mind that you can get a 3-course meal for the price of a Happy Meal.
Yeah, this is very true. We were living like kings in Kazakhstan, and we were eating in the fanciest places, and it was still cheaper than going to Pizza Express.
Yeah.
And it was surprisingly cheap week for us in terms of having food. But just going back to that police thing, I did, the first time I went to Azerbaijan, I did walk on the grass in a public space, and I did get told off by a police officer because I was being young. Actually, I didn't notice I was walking on the grass, but actually the police officer was very pleasant, said, "You don't have to walk on the grass." I apologised. And that was it. You know, like as you said, the authorities there, there's a lot of surveillance, but you kind of feel safe doing it.
The other thing that's kind of fun is that people from the region will just come up and talk to you because you look different.
I haven't had that so much on my travels. I remember being in the subway of Azerbaijan, and about a million people tried to help me onto the train, so much so that it inhibited what I was actually trying to do at the metro, which was buy a ticket.
Oh, I thought you were going to say not get on the train.
Well, no, I wasn't planning to get on the train. So I was helped into the metro because I looked lost in English. And then I wanted to buy a ticket because we were doing a research project. I wanted to record how you went to a ticket machine and purchased a ticket. But nobody would let me pay for a ticket. They wanted to help me get a ticket. Somebody else paid for me to get through to the metro. And just to be, I kind of went a couple of stops up and came back again. And then somebody else helped me get out of the metro. So I didn't buy a ticket all the time I was there, even though I tried. Nobody would let me.
Yeah, I had a kind of similar experience in my time. So, but as I said, you know, you do look different, and you look distinctively different. And I think that they have questions about why you're there, because these are countries that, you know, realistically, 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't have visited as Westerners. Mm. You know, these are, to us, they're new places. And these places are rushing at light speed to accommodate us, to invite us into their countries, and to show us a good time.
Mm.
When I went to Tashkent, they were opening up a major shopping centre and amusement park called Magic City, and all of the buildings that the shops were in were all themed around popular European.
Oh, I remember you showed me the photos. Yeah. It looked really, really cool.
So you have like...
It's almost like a toy town.
Yeah, you have like Tower Bridge, and you've got Big Ben, and you've got the Houses of Parliament, and then you've got the Luxembourg, the palace in Luxembourg, and you've got the... I can't remember what the name of that place was, Schönbrunn.
Oh, yeah.
In Austria.
Yeah.
So that's there. And the... place in Nuremberg, the big where they did the Nuremberg trials.
Mm.
Weirdly enough, that is represented there. And then, of course, they've got this massive Disney palace.
Mm.
But I'm sure you noticed from the little bit that you saw in Astana that...
I think Astana is very much about the spectacle, actually. And yeah. it kind of rings true of your experience in Uzbekistan. So in Astana, you have a lot of big buildings, and you have this Bayatek, which is this, it's like a big tower with a gold ball on the top, and that's kind of the centre of the city. Interestingly, Astana was very, very quiet. It's the quietest capital city I've been to in my life.
Quieter than Baku?
Much quieter than Baku. Baku was heaving in comparison. Very few people walking along the streets in comparison to size. And there's high-rise buildings everywhere. Now, the rumours are the high-rise buildings don't have people in them, and there's a bit of a chicken-and-egg situation with the government. So Almaty, in the south of Kazakhstan, is the old capital, and that's kind of the capital of culture, and it's very closely linked to Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan and those areas of countries and this Silk Road history, whereas Astana is in the north. It's kind of the economic powerhouse, it's closer to Russia, and there's a lot of kind of more political standing there. So the government, in a way, want to build Astana for people to move into,
yeah.
But the people haven't quite moved there yet. So you have huge roads with few cars on, and it's just very, very quiet, bizarrely so. You have the palace there as well, like the presidential palace, and... he has his own roads leading out of his presidential palace. Like, and I'm talking kind of motorway-sized roads coming out of the palace that no one is using because it's the palace road. But you think in a capital city you wouldn't have space for that, would you?
No.
But yeah, it's bizarrely quiet. Another thing that I noticed about Astana is I didn't see more than one bird while I was there.
Oh, you said last week, didn't you, about the missing birds?
So in Burabay, which you'll hear in the interview in a little while, we stayed in this area that was a bit like the Lake District, and there were very few birds. Kind of some seagulls on occasion, a couple of blue tits, I think, the other people saw. But I only saw maybe four magpies all the time I was there. But it was like being in the Lake District. I didn't hear... anything. I mentioned it on the show last week.
Mm.
But yeah, just bizarre environment as a whole, I guess.
I have a sneaking feeling that we are running dangerously behind.
Yes, we are.
So, after some music, we're going to jump into the work of Natalie's residency trip to Kazakhstan. In the interview by Uzbek-born and London-based Timur Akmanijov, speaks to local artists Charlotte Trower, Hannah Davis, Natalie, and local filmmaker Carrie, with a camera, about their residency experience of painting a mural, making a film, and generally living for a week in the Burabay National Park. But first, we're going to listen to something chilled, inspired by the starting point of the Silk Road in the northeast, Beijing and Shanghai. So we're going to have Shanghai Nights by Saeb, followed by Casey Malua's 9 Million Bicycles.
the fact that I will love you till I die. We are 12 billion light years from the edge. That's a guess. No one can ever say it's true, but I know that I will always be with you. So don't call me a liar, just believe everything that I say. There are 6 billion people in the world, more or less, and it makes me feel quite small, but you're the one I love the most of all.
So I'm a member of the No Collective Collective. and I came to do a mural working with Natalie and the other artists.
I'm Carrie, I'm a filmmaker. I also work on the Film Festival. I run a creative social club and came here to paint a mural and make a film.
Hey, I'm Hannah, I'm a freelance creative. I come to Kazakhstan to assist making a film, assist painting a mural, and generally just soak in the nature and the location and the ECG festival and all the members that are here.
That's great. So regarding the festival itself, can you give us some of your impressions and kind of, I guess, just talk about like what you thought about it, a bit about your journey? And if you enjoyed the festival, can you tell why like festivals like these that are organized by the ECG, why they're important for obviously members of the ECG, but also the country or just people in general?
So as an ECG member, this is actually the first festival that I've been to that isn't in the UK. So I made the decision to come to Kazakhstan. It's probably been a long time coming because I've been a member for quite a long time now, and I wasn't sure how different it would be to the festivals that we have at home. So I've experienced the Eurasian Film Festival majorly, and some of the art festivals. This is a very different experience. I find when we have festivals in London, they're quite siloed. People come and they'll come and experience maybe one film or one talk and then they'll go home. whereas here all of the participants stay for the whole week. The vibe is very different. You know, people are making friends and they're meeting people that they've been talking to online for a long time. We were interviewing Gennady, and he was saying that he was in touch with one of the other members and they've been coaching each other, but this was actually the first time they've met because everyone is from so many different countries, which is really cool. You know, I don't know what your impression in terms of like that structure is.
I've really enjoyed being able to experience their art and their media. So there's been piano playing, there's been singing, there's been poetry, and though I may not understand the language, you can see in the way that they express the poetry what they're feeling and maybe the intention and the meaning is behind that, as well as like seeing their sheer gratitude to be at this festival and how passionate they are to share what they have with us. That's been really really cool to see.
And the support that they're all giving each other, so for everything that we've been to, it's been, you know, the same people are like supporting each other in the things that they're kind of delivering within the programme. So, you know, we saw everyone kind of yesterday, and then it was like, oh, our mural's opening tomorrow, so then they all came and it was really nice. It felt like a real kind of bond that was kind of formed throughout.
Camaraderie.
Yeah.
And people were really happy to come and say that they think that you've done well as well, which is really lovely.
Everyone has the opportunity to present their work and express themselves, whether it's singing with a piano or poetry or Mr. Froggy, the the range is wide and it's all very impressive. It feels like everyone gets the opportunity to be celebrated individually as well as a collective.
Great. In regards to the ECG, the Eurasian Creative Guild, as an organization, how would you say that, I mean, like, I guess generally speaking, how it's affected you, or how, like, I guess it broadened your knowledge, or, you know, in that sense, like, how has it affected you as a person, but also how do you think it might affect people, both in Central Asia, but also globally speaking, like, you know, allowing people to see more of Central Asian culture, more of the culture of and the literature and the arts of like post-Soviet countries. How do you think like the ECG, like, I guess, does that in a sense?
If it wasn't for the ECG festival, I don't think I would have ever considered coming to Kazakhstan, simply because it's so different that I wouldn't know where to begin. And this is kind of like a little safe haven of, you'll be going to this area, you'll be with people who will speak English and Russian, so you're never going to be left in the unknown. And it's also shown me how communal writing can be, because I always thought it to be an individual kind of art where you create and you might show it off, but never to this extent. And I always consider it to be more online than it would be an in-person thing.
I think for me, before I encountered the ECG, I had been to Azerbaijan, so I had kind of an insight into how things might be. But I think I was kind of intrigued by Kazakhstan when we had our first Eurasian Film Festival, and we had a huge number of guests from Kazakhstan, and there was some very influential women as part of that group. And it's hard, as an English person, to understand what a culture is without experiencing that firsthand. My thoughts of Kazakhstan wouldn't be that you would have these strong, powerful women, but actually I was told later, oh yeah, actually the women here are very, you know, they're strong-minded, and that is in the culture, and that's something that really made me want to come to Kazakhstan, because it's a different way of seeing the world that I had no knowledge of before. And I think to be able to make that journey from meeting somebody from Kazakhstan to then openly be invited to come along and have so much help to do that as well, especially from yourself, Tim, who is interviewing us, you know, actually having somebody that is willing to just help us do what we need to do and see as much as we can, it's really amazing and an opportunity that I would never miss.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's probably the key aspect of the ECG, as someone that experienced it as Eurasian but film festival, but being fully immersed in this festival, is that no matter what question or hat you want to buy as a birthday present or things you want to see, there is a way that it can be done, and you, all the organisers, have a very can-do attitude and nothing feels too much, and that's really great. And if you ever have anxiety about going somewhere, you're going to be welcomed with open arms.
I mean, we've had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, really, you know. We've got to do the first
international mural.
Yeah, exactly.
Meet the British ambassador. Yeah, like, I've never met an ambassador before.
Yeah, it's important. Yeah. We've made artwork that's going to stay there for a long time. We don't know when we can come back.
Everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. Everybody needs.